Something you might not know about me is I like movies. A lot. Like in an I watched over 200 movies last year kind of way. I've been cataloging my movie viewing for years now, and I take going to the theater very seriously. Generally, I prefer to go alone, though I've eased up on that in the past year. I always have popcorn and a Dr. Pepper. It's like a Pavlovian response to buying a ticket. I immediately crave that salty, sweet, crunchy, bubbly combination. I try to sit as close to the middle of the theater as possible, and I prefer a late night screening. Some people have the comfort of church or the quietness of meditation. I have rumbling surround sound and the sticky floors of a movie theater. So when Denis Villeneuve's much-anticipated science fiction sequel Dune 2 came out earlier this year, it had me researching. What is the best movie theater in Phoenix? Where can I see this movie the largest, the loudest, the most intimate, the most involved? Now, the best movie theater is, of course, subjective. If a dine-in experience is what will draw you to the cinema, your criteria for best is going to be different than someone who might be looking for the most cost-effective way to see the film. But it did get me reading about all the types of cinemas in the Valley. Phoenix is home to 4 regulated IMAX screens, coined the world's most immersive movie-going experience. There are at least 8 dine-in theaters in Metro Phoenix, and a few indie theaters. Sadly, the beloved downtown venue Film Bar did not make it through the pandemic. In the mid-20th century, though, Phoenix had 3 single-screen cinema houses: the Palms, the Paramount, and the Cine Capri. But that is no longer the case. Welcome to Valley 101, a podcast by the Arizona Republic and azcentral.com about Metro Phoenix and beyond. I'm producer Amanda Luberto, and today I'm going to share the history of one of Arizona's most beautiful theaters, the Cine Capri. When the Cine Capri opened in the mid-1960s, going to the movies was a glamorous event. A motion picture palace was a mecca of art, something to be respected. It was for families, but it was also for lavish decor and a deserved night out. For the multiplex, one movie a night would be on display.
It went back to the movie palace days where you had big auditoriums, big screens, and movies had intermissions. There was a little portico on the east side of the building that was small. It wasn't the fancy one, it was very small. It was a smoking area where people could go out and have a cigarette during intermission.
This is Gail Martin. She runs a historical website about the Cine Capri. Works from Ingmar Bergman, Sidney Lumet, and Billy Wilder grace the screens. The era of the Hays Code, a censorship guideline that ruled Hollywood, was coming to an end. Julie Andrews, Sidney Poitier, and Gregory Peck were garnished with awards. It was the golden age of Hollywood. And here in Phoenix, George M. Aurelius wanted to expand his theater business as one-screen theaters were going out of style.
The way films were being distributed was changing. This is when the multiplexes were starting to become a thing. So the Cine Capri was kind of the last of that era.
Gail's connection to the Cine Capri is deeply personal.
My father was W.E. Bill Holmes, Jr. He was the president and CEO of Holmes & Son Construction Company. Holmes & Son was the general contractor that built the original Cine Capri Theater on 24th Street, just south of Camelback Road.
George Aurelius was the vice president and general manager of the Arizona Paramount Corporation. Their company owned 3 theaters already. Palms Theater, which was across the street from Durant's and closed in 1981, the Paramount, which you'll know today as the Orpheum, and the Miracle Mile Drive-In down in Tucson. But they were ready to design a state-of-the-art facility that would blend in well in Uptown Phoenix and also adapt to the changing film distribution style that was happening at the time. In addition to himself and Gail's father, W.E. Bill Holmes Jr., George had famous mid-century modern architect Ralph Haver commissioned for the job. To satisfy antitrust laws of the time, the constructors had to get approval from the Federal District Court of New York before breaking ground. The final product was stunning. The 16,500-square-foot building had 10 white sculpted concrete columns extending outside the theater with copper overhang atop them. The copper was designed specifically so that it would achieve the antique green patina over time. There were hexagonal jade Italian tiles and custom stained glass windows. Palm trees, Russian olive, and Italian cypress trees, reflective of the desert landscape, surrounded the building. From the second floor lobby, you could see Camelback Mountain. The inside was just as breathtaking. The auditorium had 4,000 yards of antique gold fabric covering the arch of the theater screen, going from floor to ceiling. The curved screen was behind giant gold cascade drapes that opened at the beginning of each film. According to Gale's CineCapri website, the action of the draperies elicited spontaneous applause from audiences. This was the first theater to have continental seating in Phoenix. This is where the floor slopes down and the rows of seats goes from one side to the other, getting rid of the center aisle that was common at the time. Inside, there were 800 high back chairs. And for film nerds like me, here are some impressive statistics. This was also the first theater in the Southwest that could project in all film aspect ratios at the time. An aspect ratio is the proportionality between the film's height and width. Classic televisions are typically a 4:3 ratio. Widescreens are a 16:9 ratio. IMAX is generally 1:90:1. Being able to project different aspect ratios allowed CineCapri to project CinemaScope, VistaVision, and Cinerama from its film projectors and offer stereophonic sound. One of the highlights of the theater was Star Wars in 1977. CineCapri played the film for over a year, the longest run in America. Point being, nothing had ever been like the CineCapri before. So, why did it close?
It had nothing to do with its popularity. It closed because the people that owned the land there at 24th and Camelback decided it was in the way of progress. They wanted to put in an office complex.
But it didn't take long for the Save the CineCapri push to come together.
There was a gentleman by the name of Greg Stangle, who was just an ordinary Joe Sixpack kind of guy. And he got that petition drive going to save the CineCapri, and I forget how many thousands of signatures that they had, but it was huge. But the people that owned the property were in Texas, and they just didn't have the sense of community and the sense of history that the people in Phoenix had.
Over 200,000 people signed the Save the CineCapri petition, and from there, a Save the CineCapri committee was formed. National eyes were brought to the efforts by the magazine Preservation, which was published by the National Trust for Historic Preservation. Architect Harold Williams and Arizona broadcast personality Pat McMahon were members of the committee. Unfortunately, in February 1998, the property owners won over the efforts to save it, and the building was leveled to the ground. The last movie it showed was Titanic. The theater had been under a few different owners over the years, Harkins being the last.
After hearing a rumor that allegedly the people redeveloping the theater were not going to allow Harkins to use the name CineCapri for any new theater, that just kind of got me going, and I just kind of thought, hold my beer.
When the building was demolished, Gail had just moved back to Phoenix to help her ailing father.
Harold had a copy of the original blueprints, and she who has the blueprints can do a lot. So we decided we would have a quarter-inch scale model built, and it would be in honor of my father.
The scale model that Gail had Harold Williams build is what started her on this journey of preserving the legacy of the Sine Capri.
And I found myself as sort of the Sine Capri historian. George Aurelius, who was the CEO of Arizona Paramount Corporation, was still living. So I got a hold of him and told him about what I was doing, which he thought was pretty cool too. And through him, I learned the backstory. Because I was only 10 when the theater first opened. I spent a lot of time with George Aurelius. I gathered a lot of historical information from him. And that's how I got started. I was going to donate the model to the Arizona Historical Society. And that was the beginning of it. It just turned into Gail becoming the keeper of the Sine Capri flame.
In 2003, the Sine Capri got a new life. The Scottsdale 101 location of Harkins has a lavish Sine Capri theater within it. And of course, some of the original relics are on display.
They came to me because they had saved the curtains and some other artifacts. They wanted to put in a Sine Capri museum. So I gathered up a few people at the Arizona Historical Society, and we kind of became the committee that put that little project together too.
The Harkins Sine Capri is the largest regular screen in Arizona. It has the gold drapes, auditorium-style seating, and a rendition of the white columns outside. While it's there to pay homage to Phoenix and film history, the Scottsdale 101 Harkins location is also a part of cinema's future.
I'm Jason Carney, and I'm the executive director of the Phoenix Film Festival.
The Phoenix Film Festival just finished its 24th year and is the largest attended film festival in Arizona. But in 2000, it started with three friends and filmmakers who wanted to get more recognition in their hometown. Jason has been there from the very beginning.
My buddy Greg from high school, he was roommates with one of the founders of the festival. And so he kind of called dibs on being the program director because that's how they did things. And he asked me if I wanted to come help out like as a volunteer, like the first festival. And I showed up. I had no idea what a film festival was. I was just like, all right, we're going to hang out and do stuff. And then I just got hooked. And, you know, we just kind of jumped in running theater operations. And then I was like in charge of judging and introductions of films, all those pieces. And then I picked up a few other responsibilities along the way. And then in 2005, I became the festival director, and later that year, the executive director. And here we are 19 years later, and they haven't kicked me out yet.
And over the last 2.5 decades, the festival has adapted as Phoenix has gotten bigger and the exhibition has grown.
It's just gone from like 3,000 people in 2.5 days to now like 20,000 people over 11 days. And it's not only evolved like size and scope of the festival, but it's like programming's gotten a lot better and those kind of things. So we just keep refining, adding new twists to the programming every year to keep it evolving because we don't want to just be like the same festival every year.
Hosting the festival at the Harkins Scottsdale 101 is a part of what makes it stand out compared to other showcases.
Our festival is really unique in that it all takes place in one location. So other festivals our size, you know, you've got to go take a shuttle here, take a shuttle there for a theater, but you end up spending time on that. So you miss that interaction with festival goers, filmmakers, without having that one place convenience.
Each year, two movies at the festival are chosen to be screened at the Sine Capri Auditorium.
I grew up here, so like getting to do things, even though it's not the original Sine Capri, it still has that like feel with the gold drapes and all the pomp and circumstance around it. So that's a really cool appeal for us.
Like most cinephiles who have lived in Arizona a long time, both Gail and Jason have special memories seeing something on the big screen at the original Sine Capri.
My birthday was in February, and it never failed. The years we would plan any kind of outdoor activity for my birthday party, it always rained. You could just count on it. So sure enough, I think it was my maybe 11th birthday, we get rained out. My mother calls the Sine Capri and gets a hold of Wayne Kalander, and he knew who she was. And she's basically saying, I'm begging you, I've got a birthday party, I've got all these girls, the hayride we were going to do got rained out, help me. And Wayne says, no problem, just have them dress nice. We'll have them come down, you know, we'll have the popcorn and everything ready. And they were showing The Jungle Book. It was the animated version of it. So, you know, my mother was so eternally grateful to Wayne Colander.
Hugh Goodman was one that stood out because we like went there and our friend was working the box office and he's like, it's sold out. And we're like, is it? And then he let us in, so... But, you know, and we would do things where we would go down there and like Back to the Future 2. I remember just getting there, going to a midnight screening, and it was always cool, like a good vibe. And so like as we entered our early 20s, you know, we had a friend there, and like when a big movie was coming out, we'd like all set up to go to the 7 o'clock Friday night, and they'd sneakily give us like reserve seats for us, and we'd just hang out outside, play cards, and just wait.
Even though it's not the original, historic location, the Harkin Cine Capri is still one of the best places to see a movie in the Valley. And listeners, I saw Dune 2 in both IMAX and Cine Capri. While the screen at IMAX was the most impressive, Cine Capri delivers an experience like no other. Thank you for listening to this episode of Valley 101, a podcast by the Arizona Republic and azcentral.com. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with your friends. And if you haven't already, make sure you're subscribed. Don't forget to rate us 5 stars wherever you're listening. Curious about something? Let us know. Visit valley101.azcentral.com to submit your questions to the podcast. Follow us on social media at AZC Podcasts. You can find me at Amanda Luberto. That's L-U-B-E-R-T-O. This episode was edited and produced by me, Amanda Luberto. Additional support by Kaylee Monahan. And episode oversight by Kara Ederson. Today's music comes from Universal Production Music. Valley 101 is an Arizona Republic and AZCentral.com production. Thank you again for listening. We'll see you next week.